Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On, How Far Is Too Far? For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, everybody!
Hello, my geeklings!
Another episode of Geeks.com.
Clapping and applause.
I'll put in some applause.
I do that every once in a while. There's a couple episodes where it sounds like we have a live audience. I mean, we do.
We don't?
We do have a live audience.
Right, I mean, right. I mean, when
but they're a little more vocal.
Right.
I actually want to pay Aaron to follow me around for a day with an applause track.
You know, someone told me that the genesis of the Holy Grail, you know, the guys with the coconuts riding around.
Wow. I totally followed you on like four different mental tangents there.
That the reason why that joke was born is because they actually couldn't afford horses.
That makes
they just
sense.
Didn't have the
awesome.
Budget.
That makes sense. Obstacles cause goodness.
That's right. That's where
a surrealistic comedy like that, like, just go with it.
Yeah.
Just run with it. It's all good.
Brilliant. Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in the Hollywood, and I'm a geek.
Hi, my name is Pete Robinson. I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hi, my name is Donald Marshall. I'm a writer and video game professional here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
And my name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
You know, I have to say, I wish, Peter, your wife was here on this episode.
You know, I wish she was, too.
Because this would be the perfect one to
for
have
her to just fly off the handle.
Let me give everybody a little of context. My wife is a lovely woman.
Absolutely.
Can we share her name?
Her name, the lovely Tracy Rooney.
Okay.
Who, Robinson.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't she one of those wonderful women on our older episodes where we had
she
women
is.
Talking
you,
about
you,
us?
You may know
they
her from the
women.
Valentine's Day episodes.
They were older episodes.
And some video games. If you are a video game player, you would know her.
Army of Three, Army of Two.
She's not completely divorced from the geek world. We've gotten her.
She is in it.
We've gotten her invested.
She's a major character in the Persona 3 video game.
She does voices for video games, and we've gotten her to actually play board games.
Mm-hmm. We haven't gotten her to play. She beats us.
And she beats us.
She beats the snot out of us.
But occasionally there are moments when I say something and my wife looks at me like I'm from another planet.
And in this episode, we're exploring what happens where the line of geekdom should not be crossed.
More accurately, she gives him a look as if in Tracy vision, suddenly Peter is wearing a wizard's hat.
Yeah.
And his glasses have gotten about four times as thick. He's gotten acne suddenly.
And there's tape.
And there's tape on the middle of the glasses.
Well, I remember when we started up a role-playing game once or twice, like, at the news that Peter would be role-playing with us.
Yes.
I remember seeing tears in her eyes.
Yeah, she literally
welled up.
She leaves.
And she leaves the room.
She leaves the house.
No!
One day, we've talked about this before, one day I was walking down the street with her, and I just turned to her and I said, honey, can I ask you a weird question? Do you ever, as we're walking down the street, do you ever look at a house and you think, how would that house fare in a zombie apocalypse?
At which point he got the you're a geek look.
I got the look. But the thing that she's really told me, she said she found out about LARPing. And she told me, she's let me know that if I ever LARP, that is the deal breaker.
Right, but you're a screenwriter, Pete. Isn't sort of what we do for a living LARPing?
Well, yes, but you know, we don't put on costumes.
Yes, we do. I do.
No, you don't.
I put on costumes.
He goes into
the costume department.
Yeah, no, I understand. But you said as a screenwriter.
They're just better costumes.
Yes. Well, that is
but
true.
But the funny thing was, now, I assumed that she was just talking about, like, you know, running through the woods dressed as a wizard screaming, lightning bolt, and throwing
beanbags. That's what I thought, too.
Now, when I talked to her, though, I found out she was also including things like murder mystery dinners, you know, like where you're trying to, you know, you're playing
she was actually talking about just, you know, role playing.
She didn't understand the difference between role playing and LARPing. She thought if you threw a die that she was going to leave.
Yeah, no, that's what she meant when she said it. I just didn't understand it, so I crossed that line, and luckily she pushed the line a little further.
Nice. Well, we'll get into that further later when we get into the topic full on. But how was everybody's geek week?
I finished Battlestar. Ooh.
Oh, my God.
Ooh. Oh, shut up.
It took you how long?
Spoiler alert.
A year. How did you, like, finally the ending?
I loved it, but now I can't talk to you. I have the Geeks On episode in my queue now. I'm going to go listen to it.
You're going to find out what we thought.
He had to leave. He had to leave that episode. Yeah.
So I'm going to go find out what you guys thought a year ago.
He actually, at a certain point in the conversation, put his fingers into his ears and started humming. Screaming.
Yeah.
By the way, do you think maybe our next Geeks On, we can do the second half of the blockbuster summer blockbuster movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
we'll have to decide what we're going to go see, because I am behind.
Have you seen D9?
I did see D9.
Okay. I've seen almost all of them. I didn't see, I'll go see it. If I have to talk about it,
G.I. Joe,
but I could not.
Someone
really
go with me. I want a big brain dead movie.
I don't want a big brain dead.
You know, it's doing well. That's the crazy thing. Yeah. It's doing very well, and it looks like a total hell. But
it's doing really well despite the fact that nobody says, yeah, it was awesome. But also, I haven't heard anybody say, yeah, it's
everybody.
I've heard everybody say.
However, have you noticed that D9 has been a continue? Even though you were like, D9 will never make the amount of money the Transformers did.
Yeah.
However, D9 has been a trending topic on Twitter now for almost since its opening.
Yeah, actually, since it does still seem to be decent. Going strong.
Yeah. Does anybody know how much money it's made?
I haven't checked recently. No.
Because it was only made for $30 million.
Right. I think it's over the $100 million mark.
You know, Moon was made under $5 million?
No, that's crazy.
Really?
Yes.
How'd they do that?
Well, you can do
it's
it.
Got, like, it's all inside a spaceship.
Three sets, you know? Like,
brilliant.
And, you know, it looks cheap. But, you know, I don't know why. You know, here's another thing. I don't understand why people are so amazed. An episode of Battlestar Galactica is just over $1 million.
It's true.
And it looks freaking good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, now yeah, take into account that they already have built sets, yeah. But still.
Well, they also have long-term contracts with their special effects people, so they can squeeze that a little bit.
True, but still. I mean, come on.
Okay.
Expand that to, you know, $100 million.
Okay.
What a movie like that would cost.
Yeah.
If a Battlestar Galactica 2-hour... episode was put on a screen, it would have cost $100 million.
Well, yes, that's true. What they're going to try and do, isn't it? Isn't that what they're going to...
Yeah, so we all know...
Bryan Singer, right?
Yeah.
I think we talked about this a little bit last time, but Bryan Singer is going to reboot again...
Battlestar.
I don't understand. I don't get it.
I wonder whether or not they're actually still going to hire Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict.
You know...
Richard Hatch! God, he's made out, hasn't he?
You know, I got to say, though, he's a really nice guy.
Really nice guy.
Richard Hatch, when he came out and hung out with us, I don't know what I was expecting. You know, when you're hanging out with someone who's sort of geek royalty to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
Geekulty?
Okay.
Maybe.
Well, and then I saw him.
I wasn't really sure what to expect. But then when he sat down and he chatted with us, he was like on and off the microphone. He was so freaking genuine.
And available. Yeah.
Enthusiastic and nice. Yeah, and open.
And you know? Yeah, and he had projects of his... His own projects that he was super enthusiastic about.
Yeah.
So, you know, you saw the passion behind.
I'm really beginning to think that's a trait of a lot of sort of the geek celebrities out there. Like, or the ones we've at least had been lucky enough to have access to. The authors, the actress, Gina Torres last week. My God. Like, on and off the mic.
She's really cool, isn't she?
She's awesome. And just, but again, not Hollywood. No. You know, just not what you expect from someone.
And working
that.
With her on Washington Field, she is remarkable about what she does. She is a gentlewoman and a scholar. She is a really, really cool human being.
Well, you can see she is an actress.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't try and coast on her looks. She could have. She's incredibly hot, but she did not try and coast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You gotta respect that.
She is very, very good at what she does.
By the way, I'm about a third of the way through Batman Arkham.
Awesome.
I finished it.
Oh, you did?
Actually, well,
do you own it?
Or do you rent it? I just rented it.
Okay.
It's fun as hell.
Yeah, you know, this is actually my new story. So I'm gonna review Arkham. What they've done is and you can feel free to jump in,
mm-hmm.
but what they've done is they've done an excellent job at giving you a sense of what it would be like to be Batman.
Yeah.
They have basically three different kind of ways of playing the game. Okay. The first is...
Are you going straight into your news story?
Yeah, might as well.
We didn't do the music.
I don't care.
Just do shove the music in here. Play it!
Okay.
The
So what they've done is they've got basically three styles of play. They've got Batman Combat, where you beat people up. It's a normal fighting type thing.
What style of fighting is it? Like God of War?
I love it.
Yeah,
it's counters.
Oh, yeah.
And it's awesome. String of counters. So it's really easy counters. Like it's
basically
you see it coming like a million miles away.
Well, but there's different.
Batman would.
You have to use different counters for different types of people, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but I'm fine with that.
And your the way you fight, the rhythm that you use is important. And the more strings that you can get, the more powerful you get. You literally start to if you really start beating people up, you get really powerful.
You start doing.
I don't know though. The strings pisses me off. I prefer to be able to like hit, withdraw.
No,
it's not easy.
This is strings when you have not one guy. This is a string of like
you're fighting
10 guys around you, and you're going from guy to guy and guy. And if you don't miss the step,
and if you attack the wrong person in the wrong way, it breaks the combo.
It's about getting in the middle of 10 guys, and somehow in one move, you're hitting behind you, front, back, flipping over the next guy, hitting the next guy, and stringing them all together so you don't miss the beat.
Yeah.
It's like a rhythm game almost.
Yeah. It's kind of like Mark of Kree, but you're not highlighting the characters when you're doing it.
There's not going to be any way in hell for me to actually rent this today, is there, on Memorial Day weekend or Labor Day weekend?
Probably no. You could take the if you want to just give me $10, you can take my copy and rent and keep it for another week.
There's the geek love right there. All right, so anyway, so the other type of... That's a brawler part.
Yeah, then there's also like the sort of the assassin type of version of it, mm-hmm. where there's all these guys and you have to pick them off one at a time, right? And then there's the detective part of it.
Well, here, can I expand on that part?
Yeah,
the cool thing about that part...
This is the perfect news story for how far it's too far.
the perfect thing about that section is it's not... it's more organic when you know you have to pick people apart when they have guns, essentially.
Yeah.
Because the great thing about this game is if you get shot like three times, you're dead. Like, Batman he's not Superman. The bullets do not bounce off you at all. I mean, you die fast.
Yes.
So but you can see when they have guns and when they don't. So if you see 15 guys without guns, you drop in the middle and you kick some serious ass. If you go into a room and you see 15 guys without guns, 5 guys with guns, then you have to, you know what you have to do is you have to split that group up, and you have to sneak attack and you assassinate them all individually.
Yeah.
And so
you're not really killing them, but you have to basically like choke them out or find a way of knocking them out one at a time.
Yeah, Don, you'll like the one where you invert on a gargoyle, come dangling down, and then yank a guy up into the darkness.
And then tie his leg up.
That makes me happy just hearing about it.
It is just like Batman because you've got all your cool weapons. So you can, you can throw your batarang, you've got your grappler, and you can, like, a guy's over there, you can grapple him and pull him off a ledge.
Can I use Robin as a human shield?
No.
That would make the game better.
That would have been cool. They should have put something like that in there.
But human shield?
The Dick Grayson Robin?
He was okay after he graduated.
Right, okay.
So, and I guess that means there's also a third part of the game, which is that the unlocking of how to get places, and you have a great deal of gadgets in terms of doing that. You can grapple. You've got
also kind of a fourth. Also, there's this detective part, which is kind of the weakest part, but it still is.
No, actually, the detective part's a lot of fun. It really is.
You just don't like scanning every.
Aaron looks skeptical.
Well, there was one part where I thought the game was broken. And it's because I didn't find something in the right order, and I had to look it up on the internet, and there's like, oh, you skipped something by mistake.
Right.
And I was scanning a room for, I don't know, an hour and a half.
Oy.
Yeah.
No, I haven't run into that type of a problem.
Yeah. It was really frustrating.
Aaron's cursory.
But one of the reasons why
was it just a clue or something? Because you have to...
Yeah, it was one of these clues.
Oh, yeah, no, basically these clues unlock, you can get more and more clues as you get more and more... gadgets.
Yeah, well, this was a clue that made the story continue.
Oh, okay, but that's a problem.
And so the story stopped.
Okay.
But one of the problems with that a little bit is that there's a detective mode, which is a button you click on, and you essentially see the world differently. You can see clues. You can see important parts. It's kind of like being the smart... You turn on your brain, your bat brain.
You could do that in the demo.
Yeah.
Does it have a length of time that you
can play? That's the problem, is that you almost want to play the entire game that way, and you kind of miss all the cool regular world like visuals. And it's because you can see through walls, you can see all the bad guys, you can see what weapons they're carrying, you can see all the clues, you can see all the vents, you can see everything. So why would you ever turn it off?
Right.
It should have been timed.
That's what I wondered, because I was looking at it and I was like, why don't I just stay in this mode?
Yeah, that's actually kind of a little bit of a disappointing thing, I thought.
Yeah, you tend to play in that mode, and then when you don't need it, you turn it off to look at all the cool stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you do.
I know, which is kind of...
You jump back and forth between it.
It kind of be cool, though, to kind of...
And it had to just reset.
Yeah, to reset. You got like, you get a read on the room.
I absolutely disagree.
Really?
And I'll tell you why, because... It really is important to have that mode to the speed of play. Without it, it would get really annoying. If I had to reset it all the time, I would be screaming. I'd be going, why the fuck am I resetting it? You know, it's kind of, it would be the equivalent of when you're playing a game. One of the great things about this game is that as long as you get to the next little checkpoint, which are fairly close together, you don't have to go all the way back to the beginning and redo everything.
Yeah.
You know, like you, and...
I just feel like it should be a sneak peek, not a cheat. It feels like a cheat. When if I can see through walls, see all the bad guys, see everything before they even get to me, I feel like if I had like a little flash frame, like he has a little gadget that goes, and you could like see through the walls for like just for like 20 or like 10 seconds.
Okay,
and then you get the impression, and then as Batman, you got to go in and find them all still as a regular human. Mm-hmm. This is, he's got X-ray vision all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay. I kind of just wish that it was... It's a very small complaint because the game's freaking awesome. But
what if it was scalable? So if Batman had to find that, you know, gadget a little bit later on in the game.
Well, that's the other great thing about this game is that the gadgets do roll out like every about 20 minutes. And you kind of get the standard set up at the beginning, but your gadgets just get a little more specialized. So you automatically have the Batarang. But then you get the remote Batarang where you throw it and you can guide it through. Or you can get the Batarang that has an audio thing. So when you throw it somewhere and it makes noise, so people think that you're in another place. And that's how you split out the room a little bit.
Okay.
And anyway, those things start, you know, upgrading. So then you get more Sam Fisher type of, you know.
Well, let me ask you one question about this. When we talked about the game before, we were a little bit worried that the art style of the game and the voiceovers were in conflict with each other. That the voices were cartoony and the art style was very dark. Now that you're playing the game, do you feel
that way? I'm getting more used to it. I still feel like maybe the volume of the, and I don't mean loudness, but the volume of the acting style is turned up, cranked up a little high as compared to... It's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine.
Now I want you to go watch the cartoon. See whether or not you...
Oh, that's right. You've never seen it.
He's never seen the cartoon.
No.
It reawakened my belief that cartoons could be for me as I grew up.
I thought it was better than Batman, but the best Batman that's been done yet, easily.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it had a few really good seasons, and then it spiraled out of control and became awful over the past few years when the newest versions.
Oh, the new anime version?
Yeah, the one with the Rastafarian Capoeira using Joker.
Yeah. He's weird. All right.
I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
Anyway, next news story. Donnie, hit it.
Okay, so I actually have... I think this news story is awesome.
Okay.
Robots have now been shown that they can learn how to lie.
This is just not good.
I'm telling you, man.
What are these scientists doing? They have the robot that they're training to power off of human flesh. No,
basically, what they did, they took an experiment. I think this was done in Switzerland. Okay. They took 1,000 robots divided into 10 different groups, and they basically taught them to wander a room searching for what they considered to be a resource spot. Once they found the resource spot, the robots would turn on a blue light, and they would start accumulating points the longer they were in a resource spot. The robots also had a sensor, though, and they could detect other robots that had the blue light on, and they would go to that spot to also start accumulating points. Now, they also had a slight capacity to learn, right? So, and what they would do is they would then move on to the next generation of robots, and their AI had a slight chance of mutation, right? So what the robots started to learn over time was that if they turned on the blue light, all the other robots would come to that spot, and sometimes overcrowding would push them away from that spot. So after 500 generations, 60% of the robots had evolved to keep their light off when they found the good resource, hogging it all for themselves. Even more telling, a third of the robots evolved to actually look for the liars by developing an aversion to the light, the exact opposite of their original programming.
This is not good.
That's not good.
So it's very interesting. So far, to finish the article, so far the research has more application explaining the evolution of behaviors in the natural world than in developing new programming for robots.
Gotta get out of here.
It's basically, it is proving, evolutionary speaking, the premise that what psychology has said is that antisocial personality disorder is an inherited and important trait to forward your genes. Being a bastard works.
Do you remember the montage of robots at the very end of Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah. Yeah,
I just saw that, so it's very prevalent in my mind.
I'm reading iRobot again.
Oh, God, it's good.
It is, but it's so...
It's shiny.
Dated.
It's shiny.
And the characters in there are
very 50s, very, you know...
It's like, I oughta...
Yeah.
Like, the co-workers are like, listen, you dummy, don't make me smack you. You know, it's like real 50s, like Abbott Costello type of humor.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting that...
They're very ribald. They're always a little bit hard on women. Oh, you happen to be a functioning woman. My God, how did that happen?
But it's very interesting about
You remember what Forey told us about Asimov?
Yeah, oh yeah. No, he was
He was a very much a womanizer.
Yeah. Well, no, he wasn't a womanizer. He was a flirt. He was never with anybody but his wife, but he was pinching he was pinching butts everywhere.
Yeah, the story he told us was that they come off of the elevator... And as they come out onto the sci-fi convention, there's this girl standing out there at a booth in an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny yellow polka dot bikini. And Isaac Asimov goes running across the floor, hits his knees, and power slides up behind her and bites her on the butt. Yeah. You know, not what I imagined.
Not the father of science.
The godfather of science fiction. Biting the model on the butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. She sued him in 1990. No, well, she didn't. Just saying, that's what would happen today.
But the other thing I thought was interesting is, you know, I just kind of forgot about it. It's this psychology of robots. It's not all those stories is about essentially watching robots
evolve,
have psychological problems.
Right.
You know, like the three laws have made them all nuts.
Yeah, that's what's still marvelous about it, is that you go, even though, well, he offers two sides. Is one, that the three laws have made better human beings than human beings. You know, they become better than us because they're always held by these strictures. And on the other side, that basically it drives them nuts.
Well, I find it easy, though. I find it interesting, though, that he allows the robots to break some laws in order to make the thing work.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're really strict with these laws. I'm like, really? Because they're always ignoring you.
Yeah.
And if they're ignoring you, they're not taking your orders, which is breaking a law.
Yeah. No. Have you read the R. Daniel Ovalaw series recently, where they're investigating murders and stuff like that, and the murder happens to have been committed by a robot?
Oh, no.
You should read those. Those are really fun.
It's sort of interesting that a lot of these books basically start putting... If you ignore the fact that it's about a robot, right, it starts putting forward the question of, can you be truly... control your own fate? Can you truly be everything you want to be and still obey the hardest moral codes that are built into you, you know, in all circumstances.
Well, it's interesting, you know, these robots that you were reading about on this article, they're going into kind of weird survival mode, and they have, I mean, you're seeing a psychological evolution in order to survive. They have to, I mean, I guess we consider lying a moral issue.
Well, it's necessary to hold on to your resources, obviously.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, you know, the fact that we have the terminology little white lie, the fact that we all know what that is, and very few of us can say that we've never done it, that's a moral code we've broken there in order to make life better for ourselves and for others, and we see that as being a moralistic thing. So breaking your own moral code about lying becomes the higher moral code. It's very interesting.
Sorry. Right, well, let's go to something confusing. So Google Books deal battle heats up. The battle over Google's effort to digitize the world's books and create a vast online library has intensified. Authors have until Friday to opt out of the $125 million settlement the search giant made with authors and publishers. The date for comments to the New York court overseeing this class action suit was extended from Friday to Tuesday after the filing system went down. As time ticks away, supporters and critics have been manning both sides of the debate to win the public case. The settlement reached last October stemmed from a 2005 legal suit that Google faced for scanning out-of-print works without explicit permission from rights holders. If approved by the judge, Google would create a books rights registry where authors and publishers could register works and be compensated. Ahead of Friday's opt-out for authors, Google lined up a number of professors, students, blah, blah, blah. We see access to novel as a civil knowledge as a civil right, Wade Henderson, president and chief executive of the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, told reporters in a conference call. Information enables individuals to learn, to create, and pursue their dreams. Access to knowledge defines the meaning of equal opportunity in democratic society. So
I'm not with Google on this. I understand what Google wanted to do, which is get books for free onto the internet.
Yes.
And get these, what they're calling these orphan books that are completely, you know, authors have abandoned them.
Dead books.
Yeah. And, you know, try to get them out there. But this is not the way to do it. To be able to just scan a book and claim that they just don't know where the author is, and so they have the right to do it because they can't find the author, is bullshit. And have to have the author constantly go and
maintain control over his IP
over and over. Because, you know, right now it's just Google, but what if everybody does this and they have to go to every freaking website and claim it's theirs in order to maintain control? It just doesn't make any sense.
It's really interesting because one of my favorite websites is Reddit for news, because it just, you get the weirdest stuff. And sometimes you see stuff that before it even pops up in mainstream media. But, you know, they're very pro-file sharing. And not just pro-file sharing, you know, in the sense that, you know, legitimate file sharing, but pro-file sharing in the sense that, you know, anything that you want to get, any movie, any music, any book, they think they should be able to download for free.
Right. It's a whole bunch of 13-year-old hackers and stuff who feel like they have the right to just get whatever they want to on that.
Yeah, and, you know, so internet. I saw this article where basically that the guy was saying, because people who are file sharing are doing it in the spirit of cooperation, mm-hmm. and it's massive groups of people cooperating together for the betterment of each other, that trumps personal property rights. And I was like, I don't think so. Just because a mob of people decides
they want to steal it,
they want to do something, doesn't make it right.
Well, yeah. I don't have a side of this issue that I've come down on, but I was talking to somebody about this. She's a radio host. Her kid was on Wikipedia, and her kid's information was there on Wikipedia. And she was like, oh my God, why is my child's information on Wikipedia? And she found out that one of her son's friends or something like that had put it up there.
Right.
So the issue was that she realized that she was existing in a society where what she considered private was no longer private. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I realized is that we're existing in a world where we want access to all of the information that's available. Mm-hmm. But in order to have access to all of the information that's available, we have to put ours in as well, personal or impersonal. And, you know, if you want access to all of it, that means all your stuff too. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have a side that I come down on, because I can see both sides of the issue.
But what you're saying is actually slightly different than what we're talking about, because you're talking about personal information.
Okay. Which is what intellectual property is at the end of the day.
Well, not...
It's your idea.
Yeah, but I think that there's a very subtle distinction between saying, this is my address, these are my children, facts about me... Mm-hmm. You know, which are just facts that are out there in the universe, and something that I've created.
You know, that's what your children are. They have something you've created. Or,
yeah, but
you know.
No, but your time and effort on a project that you spent your
Children.
No, it's definitely...
no. Well, some people would be more protective of their children.
I would argue when it's actually...
I'm definitely playing devil's advocate because
under
do
your,
see what
under
saying.
What you're saying, using the, if you were using the analogy would be my children are the time and effort that I've created and someone can kidnap them and take them. That's the analogy you're using.
No, but...
that would be the correct analogy.
But, no, that's what I'm saying. But some people are worried about their children's information being out on the internet specifically for that reason.
Yeah, but that's a safety issue. That's a safety issue
You're Frankensteining a couple of things together
argue livelihood. You know, when you're talking about this sort of intellectual property, can you prove that you still are getting livelihood from this work or have the potential to?
Yeah. Yeah.
If the answer is yes, then you can sue these people for damages for doing that.
No.
That's what I'm saying you should be able to do. I'm not saying that's the way you could.
But you should, like, I should be able to create a write a book and not make any money on it, and it still be mine.
I would argue that once it's been published, you've entered it into the public sector.
See, this is why I fall. Well, if I make a movie, then the instant that it's screened, people can start stealing it.
Once you've published it into the public sector, then if you no longer have any
DVD.
Potential... Yeah, you don't have the right to say, you know, I released this movie. I don't feel it should be out there anymore. I take it back. My words no longer exist. Yes, that's what you're saying. What I'm saying...
So you're saying if you buy a DVD, you should have the right to be able to steal it, to rip it because it's out there and then give it to anybody you want to.
If I can prove that you have absolutely no way to earn a single penny more on this movie... If this is a dead movie that is not shown anywhere, that is dead to the world,
essentially that
and will never
be
shown again.
Essentially, that law has been written. It's called, but they just make it easier. They say, here's the amount of time you own your property.
Exactly. Okay. It's the dead. It's the dead copyroight.
But
that's you can renew your copyright if you believe that you can still make money on something.
No, after that many years, it's dead.
I want to jump in on
unless
that.
I don't believe that's true. You actually need to be dead for 60 years before your copyright can
be
released.
I want to jump in here for a second.
I think
even then, it's moot.
I could be wrong.
I want to jump in here for a second.
Okay.
It is true that when we come up with copyright, we are trying to balance two needs, two societal needs. The first societal need is we're trying to balance the fact that when you create something – you need to be able to capitalize on what you create. Otherwise, people have no incentive to create.
Right.
Okay. On the other hand...
I disagree, but okay, go on.
On the other hand, we're looking at when you create something, at a certain point, it's in the public's best interest for that thing that you've created to become a public-owned entity.
Right.
And we understand that at a certain point that has to happen. Otherwise, certain things that have been created, you know, would basically be have a lockdown on it forever, when the reality is that some of these things would have been created anyway.
Right.
You were just the first person to get there. When it comes to something like flight, you know, there were three people that were within, you know, in the same year.
Well, if you break
had
it
flights.
If you break it back to something that where it's not so, where our discoveries aren't so either so vast or so incremental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just invented this widget which adds on to your widget which makes it just slightly better or faster or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Benjamin Franklin never sought any money for any of his intellectual property, any of his inventions. He let them go out and he said they are for the public good.
Right.
I invent. That's what I do.
Right.
Is that a model that we want to head towards, or you know,
that's fine.
But that was but that was his demand.
People create music. People create all sorts of things that they have decided that they're going to give to the public and allow them to create, like Brian Eno,
Yo-Yo Ma,
right. Like he says, I'm making these things so that other people can create more art.
Mm-hmm.
That is great, and that is up to them. But if they want to make then another song. They should be able to hold on to it without having to constantly go after other websites and claim it.
Mm-hmm.
We already have laws for it. We should just stick with it. Now, here's the thing. The music industry got hit hard because they resisted what everybody wanted, which is I want to get online and I want to, at 3:00 in the morning, I want to get a song inexpensively, but I want it right now. And I want to get that individual song. I don't want you to sell a bunch of other garbage, a.k.a. 12 other songs on a CD, that this isn't worth it. Okay? Now, I'm not quite sure how the book industry has gotten around this. I just don't think people are reading as much as they are listening to music. But right now, I can't do that with a book.
No, actually, I'll tell you what it is.
It's the phenomenon of paper. When you read a book, most people don't want to do it on a screen
true,
or even on a Kindle.
That's true. You're right.
You want
you're
paper.
Right. You're right. But that's starting to get a
actually,
little more...
Actually, I have a different take on it. When you read, you don't want to read at your computer. Okay.
Yeah, that's
you don't mind reading on your Kindle. Right. You don't mind reading on your iPhone. So we've had a technological impediment
right.
to people doing
it. We'll see whether
let me step in on that.
Yeah.
Kindle is a bridge point between, like, that's sort of new still. Yeah. And it's not highly accessed. So I don't think you can really say people don't mind reading on a Kindle because there aren't that many people doing it yet.
Again, what I'm saying
iPhone,
is that.
And iPhone, it's, yes, you can bring it anywhere, yeah. but I'm still saying, like, the electronic medium for books
yep.
is still up
but
in
this
the
is
air.
The beginning. Okay, but my point was, okay, first of all, let me just say that anyone I've talked to who has gotten a Kindle, or who reads on the iPhone hasn't had a problem with it. They've been surprised at how much they liked it. But my yeah. second point, my bigger point is that we still have the
barrier.
A barrier to people stealing books, which is that you can't steal a book for the Kindle. You just can't because it's the way the
it's got DRM,
hardware
just like the music.
I can steal your Kindle.
You can steal my Kindle. But the way the hardware is designed, it doesn't allow for that.
Right.
Whereas the hardware for music is different.
Yeah,
because there was a file allows you to steal it.
Well, okay.
And burn it to a DVD.
Let me address that and let me go back to my original point was that the now that there is Kindles and all sorts of stuff about ready to come out and they're going to get cheap here soon, if those books are not easily available, they're going to get stolen. Period. Just like Napster did with music. The reason why the music industry got hit is because they refused to give us what we wanted, and so some other person just burned them all, and you could get them for free. If iTunes was the first person to ever do that and sell them for 99 cents, we wouldn't have the mass stealing that of the music. That
okay,
was
I just clarify for me. I just feel like you're in argument with yourself a little bit because you said at the start of this that you were not on Google's side. In terms of Google scanning
no,
and all
right.
of this information.
My contradiction was that, yes, I don't like what Google's doing, okay. but if the literary industry doesn't get their shit together, this is going to be pale in comparison because people are going to have books for free all over the place pirated.
Okay.
So I'm saying they both need to get their shit together. Google needs to stop trying to make these laws, get these laws passed where they can go and just... scan in books without contacting the author, but the authors better find a way of getting their books out there cheap and free for us to buy so we don't have to go and steal them.
Okay.
We can for $3 or $2 or whatever, we can go get an old book, download it onto our Kindle 5, which is a perfect reading device
right.
in 10 years, and we don't have to steal it. But if they don't do it, their ass is grass.
I actually still disagree that I think that there's still going to be I think there will be the incentive to want to steal books, but I think until you have a platform,
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but that's happening.
Well, again, how is it happening? Because you got the Kindle and the iPhone, and Kindle. Both of them have strong DRM on it.
Yeah, but so did music.
Music had that, but music could still be burned to CDs.
Oh, trust me, there will be a way getting around.
Okay, you're right.
DRM.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, my final point is, in a weird way, I do think that Google is onto something. I agree that they should have to contact the people before they do it because the reality is some of these books could be republished and they still have monetary value. So to just
are saying they're trying to do that, but I don't trust the fact that some guy made 3 phone calls to find an author. If I did that with a movie,
no, I hear you. I don't think that they should be. I don't think they should be able to publish something without having contacted the author. Contacted. But the reality is, I think that we have a flaw in our copyright system. We have 2 flaws. First of all, people are trying to really extend the copyright system in the length of time you can have copyright,
bullshit.
And we've overdone that. We've gone too far in that direction. The fact of the matter is that Mickey Mouse shouldn't belong to Disney anymore.
Right.
You know, it should be gone.
Yeah.
Okay. The second thing is that. We have people who are hoarding copyrights in a way that this was never meant to be done. A copyright is meant to let you make money on something that you've developed. If you're not actively seeking to do that, if you're taking copyright and you're getting copyright for something to keep other people from advancing technology,
I know
that's
necessarily.
I have to step in on this one. I'm not even saying I'm playing devil's advocate. I have a different perspective. Mm-hmm. Why can't I will my creations to my children?
Well, you can for 60 years. That's fine.
If I want my creation to stay in my family in perpetuity for a long time,
you can't. You have 60 years. Yeah. That's completely
why can't
fair.
I will that? Why can't they renew it if it's an act of use? Disney, for example. You know, I believe an active use clause should be put in there.
Because
if you're continuously using something and you're still making money and your company...
Do you think Disney would have a Tarzan, a Little Mermaid, a Cinderella, any other stories that they've stolen? Do you think they would have any of those things? Do you think you would have the song Under the Sea?
They've been under active use this whole time.
I think they probably would. They would be in active use. That Disney would have had to pay the Hans Christian Andersen family a buttload of money.
They probably wouldn't have done it.
But now try and get those things from Disney now to use.
Exactly.
Here's the thing.
You can still do the Little Mermaid
forever.
You can do the Little Mermaid because right now.
Why wouldn't Shakespeare be in lockdown? Because if somebody's making money off of, why wouldn't Shakespeare?
It probably would.
Okay, but again, probably would. Listen, Don. Let me answer your question for you.
I can pass down an antique. I can pass down something that I made physically, but I can't pass down an idea.
I can't pass down my song that I wrote.
60 years.
Let me answer the question.
Why can't I pass that down through my family?
Because society, after a while, it is important that our society grows.
Mm-hmm.
And our society is partly based off of our culture. And our culture is based off of all of our ideas. If every idea is locked down forever, how are we supposed to evolve and move? We've decided that the limit of that is 60 years right now, which I think is pretty fair.
Ideas don't get locked down. Ideas change and grow. Mozart, for example, Mozart wrote all this wonderful music.
Uh-huh.
Even if his family still owned the rights to all of Mozart's music and everybody had to pay 5-10 cents every time they used one of his songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, let me finish.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
However much, it doesn't matter.
I'm setting the price at $1 million.
Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Let me finish my thought, please.
All right, go down.
Regardless of who owns Mozart's music,
mm-hmm.
the fact that it exists out there and someone's heard it has inspired new music to be created. And yes, that music may be owned by somebody else, but that new music has inspired somebody else to create new music. There's a constant evolution. New ideas are coming out. And just because somebody owns the grandfather of the newest music you're listening to now, how does that stop us from moving forward?
Because
I object to your premise that locks down society and stops us from growing.
But we wouldn't have a Disney.
No, but Don, eventually, if you concentrate power, and by concentrating ideas in one area, you're concentrating power, you're creating a monopoly over that one idea. And if you say that an Astor family or a Rockefeller family or like that has not concentrated their power and control over something until somebody steps in and says, no, you cannot have control over mm-hmm. everything.
And right what now, this brings us to is it brings us to the ultimate question of why does copyright exist? Okay. And copyright doesn't exist so that it really doesn't exist for the individual. It really exists for society. Most people don't understand that. Most people say, you know, most people don't realize that it exists because it encourages people to create. And it's a good incentive. It gives you a great incentive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take it to the point, to the extreme, it's not encouraging any more creation than it already is.
So do you feel that way about fantastic like works of art, right? So like when I create a masterwork painting,
yeah.
After 60 years, should it be taken away from my family and hung in a museum?
No, someone else can paint it.
But the point is, hold on. What you're misunderstanding is, you're misunderstanding ownership rights of something physical and intellectual rights.
Yeah. I'm not misunderstanding.
No, because
I'm drawing a parallel.
You'd make a master painting, and it's fine for anyone to make a copy of that painting as much as they want. That's why you see the Mona Lisa all over the place.
Yeah.
And valid. That's fine.
Okay, valid.
The actual physical ownership, it's yours.
How about that?
However, there's been a question of whether or not, you know, Andy Warhol can take Marilyn Monroe's image or somebody can take the Obama photo, which was, right. you know, which was somebody's used on the Associated right. Press, and whether or not it's okay to use that over and over.
But again,
you know, it's always chicken and egg.
Well, but there are things that are worked
jump
in there.
To John, Don's for example, side because I'm a fence rider.
We were just, you know, I was just at SC and we were talking about there are exceptions in copyright. So it's called fair use. So you can use copyright if you are using something in a way that is making a commentary on it, political speech, for example, mm-hmm. Or you can use it if it's for teaching. So I, for example, can break
mockery or whatever. It's,
I can break DRM on a movie if I'm going to try and pull a clip out
so I can use it in my class.
Right.
And that's legitimate fair use. Now, the studios may not like it and they may fight it, but legally, if you really are going to strictly, that's fine.
Like we could actually review a video game and put a clip of a video game on there when we're reviewing. That's how reviewers review, and it would be legit.
Fine.
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's close this since we weren't supposed to have two topics today.
We have exactly. Nice.
Aaron, next, go.
No, I'm gonna.
You're gonna forego.
The only thing I wanted to bring up since this is so long is that the Pegasus expansion for Battlestar Galactica is out. I know it sold out in like a day.
No!
So I did not get a
copy.
You
had all these things to buy today, and now you can't.
So there is a copy. So there are copies out there. I'm going to try to get one this week.
I love you.
So we'll see.
Awesome. Just final note. A friend pointed this out to me that there's a bunch of no sound astronaut video logs of all of the stuff that's going on up on, and they're posting them on YouTube, and they're really, you know, just like the black and white movies back in the day, they're just so neat. They're at once so just mundane with these astronauts going about their everyday tasks, and astounding because they're
What's
all
no sound mean
they did there's just no sound on the videos. They're just
so they're doing a video log.
They're video logs, yeah. That's okay. It they're just video logs. They're okay. Vlogs, yeah. And they're brilliant. So you should go check them out.
I would love to take like one of those video logs and then like do some special effects. So you've got like an astronaut doing a thing and there's a little porthole and you see like this alien going.
You know what we should do? We should download a few of them and start dubbing them.
Yeah, we should just redub them.
Yeah.
Let's do Mystery Science Theater. We'll put like Mystery the four Science of us little heads.
That would rock. We should totally do that.
We should do it. That's
hilarious. MST3K. Wonder what sex is like in space.
All right, any other news stories?
No, let's move on to the topic.
How far is too far?
And what do we mean by that?
What do we mean by that? What does this topic really mean?
All right, now we are geek.
It means where is the line?
Where's the line? Yeah, where is the line? And where is the line for...
Yeah, I mean, I think every geek out there sort of knows what we're talking about. Right. It's... You know you like comic books just the right amount. Mm-hmm. But I want to know somebody who likes comic books.
I want to know what you're
implying.
Too much. The line before what?
The line before
I want to hear it from
the
you,
line
Matt.
Before the glaze.
Before you should be worried that other people are going to think you're weird or before you internally have
the line before and I think that internal line can change.
Okay.
Because
but
there are
the
things
before
that
what,
the things that I've gone back and I've read my compendium of role-playing stuff that I created in college.
Oh, dear.
I mean, I did at least 4 Starfleet battles rule book size worth of notes on the entire world that I was creating. And there are certain points where I was just so passionate about what I was writing and the world that I was creating.
That doesn't sound bad.
But there is the interactivity with another human being where you see the glaze. And the glaze is when you know, it's like a bad date. It's
but
when
that
you've,
sounds
oh,
like,
when
but
you've
see,
gone
but that sounds
but
like something that's somebody step. Else's problem, not your problem.
It's definitely outside looking in.
I would argue when you start seeing the glaze in other people, it's becoming your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how often are you seeing the glaze? Because my wife glazes every once in a while. Pete's wife glazes more than Kat, but you know.
But I actually don't think it's the glaze that's the issue. I think it's the whites. The whites of the eyes.
I'm with Pete on this one.
Eyes
open,
and the person looks at you like,
"Yeah,
oh my God, wait a minute, what happened to the person I was talking to a minute ago?"
Here's my problem with this.
The fear aspect that where they suddenly stop looking at you as a human being and start wondering where you're from.
Here's my problem with this definition: is that you can walk into a room with people who just is out of contact, and they can glaze over the fact that you play video games.
Right?
Now, do you have a problem?
No.
Okay, so let's move that line a little bit. You walk into a room where everyone plays video games, but you mention you play board games, and they look at you like you're a dumb shit.
Right.
Is that your problem?
No, it's fine.
Well, why? Okay, let's move the line a little bit. You play board games, you play video games, you go, you know what, I play role-playing games. Oh, is that like Dungeons & Dragons?
Right.
They look at you and say that. Do you have a problem?
You're starting to.
Yeah, starting to. Now, why all of a sudden do you have a problem?
Okay, now here
sounds like it's a youth.
No. See, here's the thing. Okay, I'm gonna have to bring up a little personal stuff. Pete and I used to work out together at the gym, And there was a guy, Pete's very gregarious. Pete is very friendly with anybody who needs help. And this guy came up to us, a little schlubby, older guy, late 40s. And he was like, oh, so you guys work out a lot? And Pete responded with, yeah, yeah, we do. You know, we're here every day and we come about 9 a.m. And this guy took this as license to say, oh, really? And he got into a conversation with Pete that was very involved. And after a while, Pete's eyes just started to widen and widen because there's a line at which it becomes, we're not friends enough for you to be this crazy. And it,
well,
you
that's
know,
fine, but
that's what
I don't think playing Dungeons and Dragons is necessarily crazy.
No, but I'm saying there's a line of getting involved and getting involved with another person, usually strangers, where, like, if you look at the Trekkie thing, where the level of passion reaches a level of crazy. And it's outside looking in.
Well, it's
all outside.
There's a lot of
it
societal. Mm. Like, for example, if you spend $400 on role-playing stuff, most average people in the United States you'll start to get some whites around on the eyes looking at you. Right?
You should see Don doing the whites around his eyes.
Don's really good guy.
I think, however, spend $400 on a tennis racket, and nobody's going to blink in the United States.
Right. So, I mean, Aaron, you and I have seen the evolution of man geek version, where it's I think it's board gamers think they're better than role players, who think they're better than LARPers, who think they're better than furries.
Right.
Right? I think you draw your line somewhere before LARPers and furries.
Okay. I'm going to take my definition of why we're talking about this is I actually believe there is a internal line.
Okay.
And that is, to me, when it's all about balance in life. And there is a point when I think someone can get an out of balance. And I mean, this is about anything. But since we're talking about, geeky topics and geeky subjects, when it boils down to on that side, there is a time in which I look at somebody and I say, I'm not judging them because they play, because they're LARPers. I'm judging them because they're out of balance in their life. They do not have the right perspective anymore. For example, that movie about those LARPers.
Darkon.
Yeah, there's a documentary called Darkon. You can
check it out on Hulu.
Is it on Hulu?
It's on Hulu.
Yeah, it's for free on Hulu.
It's on Hulu.
Shout out to our friend Hugh, who tried to get me to watch that movie like 2 years ago, and I've been trying to fit it in.
It's very interesting, and part of the interesting part is their construction of the game. I kind of wish I invented the game.
Yeah.
It's very intricate.
Into it. Yeah.
But when I look at them, some of them seem like they're having fun.
Absolutely.
Some of them, to me, look like their life is out of balance. Right. They have lost perspective.
Some of them have the World of Warcraft syndrome.
Right. One of them starts arguing with their friend in real life about issues in this game, and it affects their friendship.
Yes.
And to me, the line is crossed, not because they're big, fat, geeky nerds, which I'm one too, but it's because their balance in their life is off kilter.
Right. Well, the thing that I have and why I want to know how far is too far is, have you ever been hypnotized or seen a hypnotizing event?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They always do a thing where they run through the crowd and they see who's hypnotizable.
Right.
Right?
Sure.
And then a certain number of people come up on the stage and they do it again. They see who's more hypnotizable out of this group. And eventually you have 2 to 3 people up there who are doing some pretty wacky crap.
Right.
And I'm always I'm still back in my seat usually.
Right.
And going, wow, on the one hand, I'm going, what would it have been like for me to go on the journey, to have allowed my brain to go on that journey? And the other half is going, they're all full of shit.
Yeah.
I just like the fact that you say, I'm still back in my seat usually. Except for that one time.
Yeah, I got brought up.
When I got hypnotized and dressed up in a dress.
I got brought up on stage because it had worked, but then he tried to put all of us to sleep and I stayed awake. And he was like, you can go.
I depart from Aaron a little bit on this one.
Okay.
For me, I watched Darkon and I actually sort of envied some of these people, their passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really feel that sort of passion for most things in my life.
Yeah, that's
like,
great.
And on that level, and I think all of them were very upfront about, yeah, I'm not happy with my life. Like, my career is awful. You know, my family life is very difficult. You know, school sucks for me. So I go here, and I get to be someone else, and I get to escape. And it's escapism. I get that. For me, I think, and for me, the line is not how society reacts to me. The line is not how, not a concern over myself getting maybe too far into something, although I see your point about possibly it being self-destructive. I see it as when that hobby starts interfering with those close to you, when it starts interfering with relationships or with work.
Well, that's part of the balance part that I'm talking about.
So like in the classic movie Trekkies, right?
Commander.
There's a woman who works for Kinko's. And she goes to work every day dressed as a commander from Star Trek The Next Generation. Everyone refers to her as the commander. Customers know her. And I have to ask the question, has she gone too far? And I surprise myself by saying no, because her work accepts her. Her customers sort of adore her for it, and it's seen as sort of a quirky, fun thing by people in her life.
It damages
her meeting new people, I'm sure.
Yeah. I would say I wouldn't put her in the crossing the line thing either, and part of that is...
But I think that's because she sees the big picture. She, you know,
She's a big dork.
Well, she is, but I think a lot of lovable dork. Right.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of this is outside looking in. If you look at any microcosmic society from the outside, there are things that will look nuts. And you will see why other people in that society are so involved in it.
Let me throw out, real quick before we move on, she is also a youngish, white, non-imposing woman.
Yes, true. Right.
If she was a bigger, imposing
man, dressed as a Klingon,
working at Kinko's, I think I'd have a very different reaction because I don't think people would react to me the same way.
Well, to me, when you say how far is too far, that brings up three different things. The first question is how far is too far for us?
Right.
What is our own personal line?
Right.
What are the things that we would not do?
Us meaning society or
no,
us
the four people in this room.
Okay.
Us the four geeks. Because, you know, we're pretty open to a lot of things.
Your personal circle.
Yeah. We're pretty open to a lot of things. Just us. Us four right here at microphone speaking.
Oh, you're defining for the show right now.
The show. How far is it for each person in this room? What is too far for us? Because, you know, what's too far for me is not necessarily too far for you, but collectively we have some sense of that. The second thing is how far is too far? It has something to do with being aware of what is too far for other people.
Yes.
Okay. Knowing what the line is for other people, having some savvy about that.
Yeah. And because that's where I think you run into the trouble spots.
That's the trouble spot. But the third part is when you take it even to the extreme of, you know, not even not knowing how what the line is for other people, but taking it way past that where you get
people
frankly,
are way out of whack.
Way out of whack.
Right.
But
I agree with Peter. I like these levels here.
Knowing how far is too far for other people is really important because there are people who you run into, and I hate it when this happens. Like there's a guy I know who I see down at Kinko's, and you know he's a nice enough guy. You know he's very bitter about life. Very smart. But the biggest problem with him is
he's working at Kinko's.
I just say Kinko's. I'm sorry, I meant Starbucks. I see him. He doesn't work at Starbucks. He hangs out at Starbucks.
Sure.
But the biggest problem is when he sees you, he comes over and he starts a conversation and doesn't care about what you're doing, doesn't care about whether you're busy, doesn't care about when you want to stop the conversation, and really doesn't care about what you think.
Right.
He just wants to tell you what he thinks. He has no sense of what the people around him, what their line is and what too far is. And it has nothing to do with geekiness. It has to do with just social
interaction.
Being
unaware of.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, that's one step that's too far. You know, me saying to him, yeah, you know, I actually have this assignment I have to get done right now because it's due at this point. I can't talk right now. And him continuing to have a conversation with me.
Yeah. Right. Now. I have a question, and maybe this might help us define the rest of the conversation. What are the people in this room's line before you feel like you've crossed into some type of weird twilight zone?
I get a little weird about LARPing. I'm pretty good with most geeky stuff right before, but even cosplay.
I find it
even though I'm an actor.
I find it fascinating that it's the actors that seem to have the most problem with LARPing.
See, I would be okay with maybe trying it.
See, well, I have so much emotional investiture in terms of doing what I do as my job that LARPing thing.
Well, you might also just see it as work.
So I have a question. So if you're sitting at, if we're sitting around a table,
yes,
and you're doing an accent about whip shanks, your innkeeper wish whip shanks,
right?
Which I've heard you do the accent,
right? Yeah. Wait, hold on. Do the accent for a second.
Oh, Whipshanks, he was a great guy. Yeah. You know? He's great.
So we've got Whipshanks, yeah. And we're all comfortable with that. And you stand up, mm-hmm. and you walk over, and you start cooking at the oven, mm-hmm. in the kitchen, yeah. and you're playing Whipshanks. Yeah. We've crossed the line.
In character.
No. But
if you dress up and go into the woods and wait by a stump for a group of people to give
you
the lessons.
And I'm playing Whipshanks. It's one step too. I don't know why.
Now, see, it's too much. I wouldn't have a problem putting armor on and going and beating the hell out of each other with like fake swords.
Which I've done.
That sounds like fun. Doing that in character would be a little too far for me.
Which I've seen.
But you're okay with being in character around the table, not in armor.
Honestly?
So it's the combo. If you're in armor and in character, yes, it's too far.
Exactly.
If you're in armor,
yes,
or in character, you're fine.
Exactly.
See, for me, that's my line. I think it would be easier to go out, dress in armor, and then hit people as a character. Because I'd feel dorky doing it as me.
Now, Peter.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Peter,
I
would totally if you're feel paid like and there's a camera pointed at you, it's fine.
Yes.
In armor and in character.
Depends on the production value. I myself would still have problems doing that because I'm just not comfortable. I wouldn't be comfortable acting.
Okay, Matt. Yeah. If the camera's pointing at you and you're in character and in armor,
I'll do both feet jump
what
in.
What if you're not being paid?
That's harder.
But if the camera's pointed at you, you're still okay.
But because I have to say, I felt that line get twisted on me when I was not getting paid for acting gigs. I did a small student film called Hatsu and Geisha, where I played a Japanese tourist, you know, and it twisted my line. I have seen it. Yeah, with big Coke bottle glasses.
Well,
and
but
I was
that's
like,
different.
You know,
that's because it's pressing racial buttons, yeah. Not because you're you're playing
those racial buttons are no more social, you know, they're no more
yeah
social
because that's a thing
are.
For you if you are in kick-ass armor on a horse riding through with a damn sword,
yeah,
seeing like
yeah,
a badass yeah,
it's another stereotype but it's seen as a positive one
yeah. With a rickshaw behind you, we're telling me there's not a difference.
Well, you're bringing up something
true.
Really interesting.
True,
in
true,
terms
true.
Of how far is too far, that has a lot of different categories, okay? Because certainly there are political
Is there something
lines.
You feel uncomfortable with, Aaron? We haven't talked about you. What is your
I
line?
I would try maybe LARPing, I guess, but
furries?
Well, to me, that's not furries is not a geek thing. That's a sexual thing.
This was that's the point I was about to make, that you can have political lines, you can have geek lines, you can have sexual lines, you know, that there are a lot of different categories
maybe
of things.
Maybe that's my
that,
problem
know, religious
with the vampire LARP, is that it crosses too many lines at once. You know, is that people enjoy the sexuality of it and...
Oh, as somebody who's participated in a vampire LARP for years, there was zero sexuality at the LARP. That's sort of an externally imposed on thing. When you're playing the game of vampire, generally sexuality, if it creeps in, it's between people who are sexual with each other to begin with. If you are if you are playing it being vampires...
Right.
In my mind, that's not LARPing. You're role playing in a different genre. That's not a game.
Right.
And
LARPing,
there are people
who LARPing
do that, though.
Is a game.
Right.
As long as there's a structure for that. As long as there are rules and goals.
Maybe it's the
rules and goals.
I'm on board. But if you're talking like, no, I'm a vampire. I really just want to, you know, cut your neck and drink your blood while you squirm around and pretend I am actually...
So if there's some type
of... No, then I'm just creeped out.
So if there's some type of rock, paper, scissor mechanic for the sex, you'd be okay with it?
Yep. Don't judge me.
A rock, paper, scissor
Well, that's
mechanic.
How they do combat, right?
It's true, yeah.
The LARPs I went to, we actually didn't, but we used a chip system. But,
oh, you guys carry on tokens or something?
Yeah. Little bags. You'd pull it out. And then, like, if I'm attacking you, like, okay, I have my strength is a 7. I pull a 10 chip. I have a 17 to attack you.
Oh,
your
like
your dexterity is a 5. You pull a 12. You're at 17. Oh, great. We have to do a roll off or something, you know?
Oh.
Interesting.
Okay, but would anybody ever act out the fight after it had been done in the chip system?
The fight was never acted out. That was always verbally done. You describe what's happening. And combat almost never happened. It was always very social in the group that I was in.
I would maybe even dress up in a costume at a con. If I were at a convention, I could see doing a costume at a convention.
See, but a con is safe. Like, I could wear a costume to a con. I could wear a costume to Halloween. I couldn't wear a costume down Hollywood Boulevard.
Because it's an acceptable line.
Yeah.
The line has already been...
context is okay.
The circle has been expanded to include
Peter,
so much more.
What's your line, then?
My line? I think we already talked about it. I mean, I would have difficulty dressing up in armor and stuff and acting it out. You know, I'm sure I could get myself to that place, but I don't have a whole lot of desire to.
And what about, you would have a line about maybe spending money on a particular hobby?
Yeah, how much money are you willing to spend?
Like,
how
much in this house would you be willing to hang up a geeky movie poster in your home?
Probably wouldn't be able to pull it off because my wife wouldn't probably go.
But would
for
you
it.
Do it if she didn't say anything? Like, would you hang up a Lord of the Rings poster? Yeah.
I probably wouldn't, but only because my personal taste is not to decorate that way.
Okay. But meanwhile, I have.
Yeah.
In my living room, I have a Spellbound poster with the Wicked Stepmother from Snow White.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But I bought that because it's not because of the character. I bought it because it's actually really just a cool looking poster. Right.
And how much, it's to move this slightly, how much of this, because a lot of the geek hobbies that are out there are childlike. You know, how much of this is bringing our childhood with us, and a lot of people feel more uncomfortable with it because they want to be adults. They don't want to be
kids. Let me revert to one last thing real quick before we go there. It just occurred to me, like, Aaron always jokes with me saying that I'm the transvestite gamer in the group. And it's
no,
true.
You're the...
what is it?
Netvestite.
Netvestite. Yeah.
Because like in all the fighting games, Matt knows I'm always the small Chinese girl.
Small Chinese girl.
In role playing games, I tend to prefer the online RPGs. I play a female character. Mm-hmm. Even a tabletop, I play a mean woman. You know, I play a mean ass woman. I play better women than some of the women I play with. I've actually had a scene where I had to sit down another female character and tell her, okay, dear, this is how you be a woman in game, right?
Oh, boy.
Like, you just don't know how it's done. Every single female listener right now is like, oh, you bastard. But I went to Comic-Con, right? And I was online for a panel, and there's a teenage guy behind me dressed as Sakura from Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
Right?
And he crossed the line.
Immensely uncomfortable. And I can't explain why. Like, drag, I get drag.
Fine.
You know, I live in freaking Hollywood. I've seen drag. I've talked with drag queens. You know, whatever. Not an issue. But for some reason, at Comic-Con...
I saw a pretty good drag queen duo, the Electra Woman and Dyna Girl, that was pretty good at Comic-Con.
There you go. Well,
but for some reason,
like, this one crossed my line. I was just like, dude, no.
But I had some conversations with some people at Comic-Con that went a little too far. That I was just like,
oh, you did?
You're deeper into this than I could ever get. You know, I appreciate where you are. I even appreciate how well you've done it. Your costume, your work. But you're scaring me.
Yeah. There is a... Okay, here's... This is the part where... Okay, crossing the line. I feel like if I get the sense... This is the balance part. If I get the sense that your life is out of balance, that there is a loss of reality. Like, I had a roommate in college who started playing on... This is back before there was World Wide Web. He was playing a MUSH, a multi-user dungeon.
Yeah,
right. MUD. And he was playing day and night. He got hooked. Old school.
It happened.
Old school, yeah.
It happened.
And we'd come back, and he would start talking about, like, a friend of his. And I was like, oh, and, like, real life. And then all of a sudden, you'd realize he's talking about the game. He stopped kind of the reality of what real and the game was being blurred. Mm-hmm. And to me, I thought that there was a level of commitment and imbalance in his life that made me just cringe. And I went, oh my God, this guy's completely nuts. Like, I felt like, and I've had that conversation with people at Comic-Con where I'm like, wait a minute, that's just a hobby, right?
For me,
let me ask. I'm sorry.
For me, how far is too far? I can define it very succinctly with two things. Too far is when your life gets out of balance, so that it's all you do.
Mm-hmm.
So if it becomes an addiction, that's too far.
Mm-hmm.
But the second line of how far is too far is if someone is saying, "This is my personal line, and please don't keep talking about this. Please don't cross that personal line." That's too far too.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't respect another person's boundaries, if you can't find a way to relate to someone
mm-hmm.
within a framework that is that is sort of in the middle ground, then that's too far too.
Right. I agree with you about the boundaries thing, but let me just ask a question. I'm not really sure if I'm actually saying this is the case, but I'm mm-hmm. curious. When your life is in balance, right? Can you sometimes correct your life by going to the other imbalance for a time to try and
yes.
correct yourself? Like, for me, right? Like, I
what are you saying, Don? You're talking directly to me, aren't you?
Yeah, well, like, for me, when I was at my heaviest, I found the only things that helped me really lose weight was to go on the Atkins diet.
Mm-hmm.
The Atkins diet is the incarnation of imbalance in your diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's protein, 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 meat, 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 veggie. That's about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to stay there for a certain degree of time, and then as that imbalance corrects what's wrong with you, when you do the diet right, you're supposed to start reintroducing balance.
Okay.
I think if you're driving down the road, swerving back and forth and hitting the guardrails on each side for the rest of your life, you're not doing it right. Maybe True. If you hit one side or the other and then finally you correct, that could be one
well,
thing.
Well, this is the concept of the difference between harmony mm-hmm. and balance. Okay, which is to say that balance, you know, our concept of balance is that, okay, we got a little, you know, teeter-totter, and we're going to put a certain amount of weight here, we're going to put a certain amount of weight here. Well, the problem with that is that the world is not in balance.
Mm-hmm.
The world is constantly moving, so you really can't achieve something like that.
Yeah, it's doing a seesaw wall in the middle of an earthquake.
Right,
right.
It just can't, it doesn't work. So harmony, on the other hand, is that you recognize the world is constantly moving, the world is constantly changing, and you're seeking to find that moment of balance, constantly readjusting.
It's more about like the guy with the stick with a hat on the top.
Right.
And you're moving your finger around, keeping that trying balance.
That hat
yeah.
in one place. But, you know, if the, you know, yeah.
Right. Exactly. However, it's also never an individual. It's also an agreement between a lot of people to say, this is society's line right now. You know, this is what we all agree on is okay. And if you go farther than that,
mm-hmm.
it goes a little bit too far. But it depends on what your society is. Mm-hmm. I mean, the society at Comic-Con is vastly different mm-hmm. than the society down at Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always, you know, if you're talking about the teeter-totter, there are also people who don't give a crap, who basically say, I realize that I am, you know, socially inept at this, or this is my passion and this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And they say, F you, I'm going to go do it. And sometimes they push the line.
I agree.
They change the society so that then that norm is socially
sometimes
acceptable.
Those people are hard to be around. Like, there are some inventors,
yeah.
there's some creative people, and a lot of them have been nuts in the past.
Some of the greatest creative geniuses are freaking Looney Tunes.
And they push the line and they push things forward. That doesn't mean that they are happy or that they are good to be around.
Right, or healthy.
They may be good for the world, but the world's not being good for them.
Go ahead.
It's well put.
Just one other thing that I want to bring up is playing into what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Is I think one of the reasons why we're made uncomfortable by people who break these boundaries, right, is there are these social mores, whatever you want to pronounce it as, that they protect us in society, right? I know that I can trust you because if you obey most of the social mores or mores or I don't know what the word is. Is it moray?
Moray.
It's one of those things I read, never say. if you obey most of them, you're probably going to obey some of the bigger ones, like don't steal from me,
right?
Don't kill me, don't hold me down and do horrible things to my body. You know. Well, the more of these social contracts that you uphold, the more likely you are to uphold the others.
Right.
So I can suppose from just your behavior, oh, look, he obeys most of the social contracts I do. I think he probably has the same social structure I do. When you start interacting with somebody who is cross-dressing as a video character, who can't obey your conversational boundaries as far as I can't talk to you right now, please stop talking to me. No, you keep talking to me. the more of those social contracts they break, the less trust you have that they're going to uphold the big ones. And maybe.
I never really look at somebody who's, you know, has a you know, G.I. Joe collection and think, eh, he's probably going to.
But you're talking
somebody.
About one social contract that they're breaking,
right?
In your mind, what if they have a G.I. Joe collection? Collect guns, dress as G.I. Joe, have their entire place decorated as a bunker, you know, have a bondage gear.
A friend of mine who is a set designer, is a brilliant set designer. I went to his house.
Oh, no, we've had him on our show.
We haven't had Stan on the show.
Oh, we have had the other guy.
Oh, yeah. Different Stan. Sorry. Yeah.
And he loves action figures.
Yeah, everyone knew Stan loves action figures. He's got a big toy collection. That's what I was told.
He does not his like house them, is a museum. So he likes to keep them. You walk in, and his house is one big diorama.
Right.
I mean, like, you walk every in the door. Every surface
has... The toilet had toys on the back of
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's being out of balance. Bathroom counter,
but
the living
socially,
room,
you'd
room.
Never know Stan was like that at all. He's just a sort of like slightly
socially
kooky.
In your social interaction, but his girlfriend's socially probably.
She really likes dolls.
And well, he so just found somebody.
He
that,
found
yeah.
somebody
her brand
who
of nuts.
Worked perfectly. Yeah, you well, walked into their garage and it was packed to the 20-foot ceiling with doll houses. I mean, it was a little freaky for me.
This brings up the another question, which is in terms of how far is too much. The question of to what extent should you subvert who you are to exist
society.
In society.
Right.
Yeah, and, that's a good question.
You know, it seems to me, you know, that to me, the mark of a healthy person is two things. Number one, that they own who they are in terms of what they appreciate. But at this point, I'm pretty straightforward about things. I say I'm a geek. You know, and I recognize that, and that's something I'm actually – it's not a bad thing to me.
No.
I said it to Tracy's mom. I said, you know, I'm a geek, you know. And she said, oh, Pete, don't say that.
Right.
And I was like –
I had someone say that to me recently, too.
Yeah, and I was like, no, that's what I am, and I'm really comfortable with that.
I'm bringing geeky back. I'm showing you a lot of whites around my eyes right now. That's all I'm saying.
But the other side of that is that, you know, you have to be a well-rounded enough person to exist in society. And I recognize that if I run into someone that's not into the same things that I'm into, you know, I can find something that I'm into with almost anyone that we can have a conversation about. I don't have to impose some particular part of my life on them, you know, to be able to be around them.
Yep.
You know, so that's the other part is being able to have enough of an interest or of a life that when you meet someone, you can find some common ground.
Your life needs to be a well-balanced meal.
Yeah. My issue is with the how far is too far is actually not the people who have gone too far. Because I just recognize that as, you know, we're probably not going to interact on a regular everyday basis. But I see how this has become the one overriding passion for your life. My problem is the people who don't know that they're going slightly too far. And are yet still working, you know, working in the same social situation as I am. And I see them sabotaging themselves over and over and over and over and over again.
Why are you looking at me while you say this?
I'll look at no one. But, you know, you see them in a situation and you're like, oh, the joke went one moment too far. Oh, you took that, you know, oh, that girl got really uncomfortable when you said that but had no idea that you were saying it. That's where I get really uncomfortable is the embarrassment of it.
By the flip side, though,
but that's me.
I'm going to hold up Darkon as this example. Darkon, again, is a documentary on a LARPing group somewhere. I don't remember where.
North Carolina, I think.
North Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first, I'm sitting there watching this kind of – I'm feeling like, oh, God, please. No, these people are representing LARPing. Everyone who knows I play vampire games, this is what they think I did.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I'm watching it, and I start thinking, like, well, what really are they doing that's so horrible? They're not doing this in the middle of the city. They're going off to a park or the woods, going off on their own to an isolated place to get crazy for a little while. How is this different from, like, paintballing and fantasizing that you're a soldier for the weekend?
Yeah, I was fine with all that.
What I started thinking about more was, like, by the same way that we might get nervous about somebody who is so different from us in some of these ways. Society tends to try and hammer down anything that's different. Mm-hmm. And them getting dressed up as fantasy warriors and running around in the woods is so different from the weekend warriors who are playing paintball that we make fun of these guys that feel even more passionately about it.
Right.
When they're just going off and doing their own thing away from everyone else.
Right.
And how is that wrong?
Yeah, no.
Like, I just don't understand. Like, I started overanalyzing this.
Well, I don't think it is.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's anything wrong.
Well, I was watching it going, oh, these guys are not healthy. You know?
Well, like, well, they were
I was judging them.
Yeah, no, and that's where I was about to say. There's nothing wrong with having these interests in doing it. But there was, and it wasn't wrong that they went out and did this. It was when you got into the details where they started to talk and they started to say things that were letting you know that they were basically saying, I don't fit in society. Yeah. And so I am fleeing to this place as a way to escape society.
Yeah. I'm living and, through this character because my other life doesn't work.
Right. But, that said, doing this other thing was helping them cope and perform the rest of their life.
But see, I was wondering. But that's not how. If you're playing too much Warcraft because your life doesn't work, if you're playing LARPing because your life doesn't work, if you're doing these things because your life doesn't work, your life doesn't work.
Yeah, well, what I was wondering is whether or not it was self-perpetuating. That in saying I'm going to go into the game because my life doesn't work, well, then aren't you creating a cycle of it?
Well, I'm going to make a counter-argument of the main character, as far as I could tell, of basically his parents saying, like, he had no friends.
Right.
We really had no hope of him having a future involving people.
He was sort of a trench coat kid
he sounded like he was
Columbine kind
really
of
lonely. Yeah, and then he joined this group, and this group ate his life. But this group also gave him friends, a social network.
Yeah,
that's great.
And it helped him. But he's way too in the group. I don't think anyone's going to question that.
He's in.
But that group did give him a framework that extended outside the group and gave him a world, like a basis to work from, even if it seems like it's outside the real world to the rest
Again,
of us.
Again, you have to look at it.
This is the guy who hadn't kissed a girl, right? He kissed a girl in the game.
Yes.
I don't know. He had a girlfriend in the documentary, but
I think you have to look at this from the perspective of, yes, sometimes it can have a beneficial effect, but that still doesn't mean that it's a healthy situation.
Fair enough.
And honestly, it's great that it did all these things, but that still doesn't mean that
something else might have had that beneficial effect without the side effect.
No. It's just that
everything has
replace that with World of Warcraft. Where he's got friends online.
Let's replace it with football. Mainstream.
No, hey, if you're that far into football, mainstream. Then yeah, you're out of balance. We're just talking about the geeky side. I'm not accusing geeks of cornering the market.
Yeah,
I'm just saying you're out of balance.
Out that
either
this
way.
Exists in every strata of society.
Of course.
And I think that's a valid point. You know?
I would like to confess, since I've ragged on some people I've met at Comic-Con and stuff,
uh-oh.
That I have been accused of all these things. By all sorts of people, including people in this room.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you are wearing
example,
a Star Trek uniform.
I have heard the comment
I pick
about
on
my
time.
Baggies in my... I'm a board gamer as well.
What about Aaron?
Let's just explain that when Aaron gets games, they often don't come up with enough plastic bags for him, so he has
his
own
supply.
They
never come with plastic bags, except for one or two.
Yeah. So Aaron has his own supply, you know.
Yeah.
Aaron also has his own supply of little wooden cubes.
Yeah, Aaron
to
also
introduce
Aaron
into
buys
games.
Enough plastic bags to be a dime bag dealer for as a drug.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the FBI is tracking him.
How could he possibly
spend $80 on a game? I want to make sure that A, they are kept nice, and also the next time we play, that we don't have to spend 40 minutes sorting.
Well, you know, actually,
but I have heard comments from the peanut gallery in this room that it may we're
those
going
comments
into the
were
geeky.
Always with admiration.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Let's make, but I actually don't think that's crossing the line.
But there's a little bit of tease in there that's got a bit of truth into it.
That falls more into the category of a commander dressing up in her outfit. You know, like somehow that's acceptable to me.
Wait a second, that helps, Peter. Thanks.
I said it like that on purpose.
There was an online documentary that said basically Trekkies are far more geeky than Star Wars guys.
Uh-huh.
Why? You're the Trekkie, we're the Star Wars. Well, I don't know why. They have a whole bunch of reasons.
I'd say I'm more Trekkie than Star Wars.
Because more people like Star Wars than Trekkie. That's why.
Yeah, I think I have more context from Trekkie, so I think I lean more in that camp.
I have had
just having that many board games, I've had people come over to my house and see my board game collection and give me the look.
Oh,
the
yeah.
white eyes, the whites in their eyes.
Even those of us who love you have given
that's
you that.
That's because it's like a brick wall made out of board games.
Oh, it's not well, that
but, yeah, but again, here's the thing.
A little like, bit of mortar, that could last a while.
Part of our job in society...
Great wall
as human beings, and this is actually when there's another way to cross the line, okay? And you can cross the line by being intolerant of other people's
of course.
Things. And so, you know, part of our job in society is that I don't have to like everything someone does, but like as long as they're not imposing it on me, I should be okay with that.
Right.
So like, you know, for example, you know, I mean, this isn't a good example, but, you know, whenever Tracy and I go to Florida, you know, we have different takes on things than a lot of Floridians, especially my parents or my grandparents. Mm-hmm. So when Tracy told everyone down there she was a vegetarian,
oh boy,
it was really interesting because right. they don't know a lot of vegetarians, right. you know, in the town that we're in.
Hey, China. So
my grandmother looked
not a lot of vegetarians
at my wife and said, "Wait, so you don't eat meat?" You know, she's like, "Yeah, that's what vegetarian means," and she goes, "Why?" You know, so. You know, but they were pretty cool about it. It took mm-hmm. them a second to kind of go, okay, but she's different. But then they were fine. They didn't push it. They didn't, like, you know, try and put slabs of meat in front of her or cook meals that
you
had
will
no veggies.
Eat it.
They were okay with it. And so, you know, they, you know, even though there was that moment where they were teetering on the line with each other, it was fine. Mm-hmm. You know, on the other hand, if someone comes over and they see that you have board games in your house and then they, like, you know, make a big deal out of it, you know, and even though you haven't pushed them on them, mm-hmm. then that's a problem. If they start mocking you for it,
right.
you know,
no, I mean, obviously.
That's a problem. That's crossing the line.
That's a little childish too. But but no, I mean, I have seen that. I've had carried a game somewhere, and somebody said, "What is that?" And I said, "A game." And they say, "Oh, is that like Dungeons and Dragons?" Which is always
that's always the
common
phrase.
The go-to.
And then you go, "Well, not really, but it's you know." But there's something down that line.
I think we should start every time somebody says that, you know, why is it like Dungeons and Dragons? We should go, why do you like Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah.
Only if you lisp while you do it.
Yeah, why do you like Dungeons and Dragons? That's awesome. We can't play.
But I don't know. So I have had that look.
I have a 12th grade level ranger and that.
And I know that, Peter, I know you've gotten that look because I've seen that look with your wife when we
Tracy
played.
Gives it to me every once in a while.
And I'll admit, like, I have role-playing game books that I enjoy reading. Like, I picked up the Vampire rule book recently for the new version. I was planning on reading it. And I actually had it in my hand as I was about to leave my apartment one day, and it occurred to me, do I really want to be seen reading this in public?
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. I never used to have a problem with that in college. I read rule books in restaurants all the time. Now here I am, you know, 10 years out of college. Don't shut up.
Watching 10 years.
And I can't leave the – like, I really didn't want to be seen reading it in public.
I did a similar thing at one of the gaming stores. But what I realized as I was walking out with one of the books was interesting to me that it wasn't – I wasn't going to play it.
Yeah.
And that was interesting to me.
That gave you a little bit of leeway?
It was I realized when I had the book in my hand that I was like, part of me has grown up enough that I know I have too many responsibilities and I'm never going to get to this module to be able to play it. Yeah. I'm just going to read it because I'm interested that somebody somewhere is going to be,
I've done the same thing.
Yeah, you know? Well, it's kind of like we've started a couple of role-playing games, and we haven't got...
It's always been like,
we
just
don't have the time.
Yeah, we just don't have time, and I finally realized recently, you know, we're never really going to, you know,
I
probably...
I did buy another small...
Speak for yourself. I am going to get a role-playing game going. I will do this.
Damn it!
I refuse to sacrifice something I enjoy.
I did buy another role-playing game the other day that doesn't require a game master. The players, yeah. It's a Western. I'll have to read it. I don't know if it's any good, but
we'll see. And there's also somebody who's got to come up with a world for us that we can just go and interact as characters every now and again. I mean, that's what the MMORPGs. I think that's one of the reasons why they eat people's lives so well much is because they harken back to that quality that we all felt. When we were young,
you can go.
It is the simplest mm-hmm. basic level of role playing that we first remember.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Have we beat this dead horse?
I think we've gone too far.
All right. We may have. But we have some other people...
That want to go too far for
who
you.
Who want to go too far for us. And who should we do first? We have Smarty Librarian and John Wick this
both
week.
Both of them decided to contribute. Oh, and they're both awesome.
Just a double whammy of awesomeness this week. Why don't we start off with Smarty?
Let's start with Smarty.
We'll go literary to start with.
Let's listen to Smarty.
Cool.
I was watching the Swedish vampire film Let the Right One In last night, and a funny thing happened afterwards. I got creeped out. I even had a vampire-themed nightmare. Me. The woman whose favorite book at 12 years old was Stephen King's It. When was the last time anything vampire-related made you scared, rather than made you feel like you were watching an episode of Sexy Times USA, aka True Blood? Don't get me wrong, I'm definitely on board with Team Eric, but the quality of True Blood is the exception rather than the rule these days. The reason I waited so long to watch Let the Right One In, soon to be remade and ruined in Hollywood, by the way, is that I am sick and tired of the brooding Heathcliff-style vampire of massive romance. Vampires are no longer predators, hunting humans like lions thin the herds of antelope. They are now woobies. Woobies who need the love of that extra special author insert heroine. While there are lots of vampire romances out there, from Anita Blake to Sookie Stackhouse, the kingpin of all terrible vampire romance stories is, of course, Twilight. Twilight is horrific and scary on a number of levels, none of which have anything to do with the actual vampires in the actual novels. In my opinion, Twilight is best read as a cautionary tale about getting involved with an emotionally distant and stalkerish man/boy with a glittery chest. Think about this. A vampire can tend to repeat 9th grade biology class for all of eternity. His hobbies include creeping into your bedroom to watch you sleep and stalking your every move so you don't fall when you trip over your own feet. Sounds like a real catch. An intellectually lazy man whose hobby is... you. This is romance for millions of women across the globe. They've turned Edward Cullen and actor Robert Pattinson, who plays the on-screen Edward, into romantic ideals. Ew. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, in many ways the forerunner of a lot of this kind of vampire romance, nevertheless knew that when Angel stalked Buffy and crept into her bedroom at night to watch her sleep, he was being evil and gross. What is this, you say? Is Smarty Librarian actually encouraging us not to read? Of course not. Please read Twilight if you're curious. But think about what it is you're reading. And I would strongly encourage parents to talk to their teenaged and preteen sons and daughters about the kinds of behaviors that Edward engages in and how inappropriate they are for anyone who is human. And what about other vamp romances? If it was up to me, I would chuck the lot of them. The Anita Blake books are fun at first. The first 10 or so read like detective novels, and if you're a fan of that genre, then go for it. After that, we get into some seriously disturbing sadomasochistic erotica, so be warned. The Sookie Stackhouse books are, very unlike the television show, they are chick-lit murder mysteries with an added dash of the supernatural. Fans of True Blood the show, like me, might find them a little dull, like I did, missing the edge and societal commentary that True Blood has. Anne Rice and her vampires spend a lot of time brooding and taking themselves seriously. The Historian, which came out a few years ago, is far too long and contains far too few vampires. So where does that leave our recommended reading? The one vampire novel I will recommend to you is Robin McKinley's Sunshine. Her vampires are dangerous predators and have absolutely no interest in sexy times with humans. Plus, the heroine's best friend is a librarian. It's a very good story. And the same Del Toro who brought us the delightfully creepy Pan's Labyrinth has a vampire novel out. It's called The Strain. It's the first of a trilogy and will hopefully do its part to wrestle the vampire concept away from Edward Cullen fangirls. And that's all for me this week. Hopefully I'll be back next time with another less ranty subject. Back to you, boys.
Why
don't you do that again?
For more from Smarty Librarian, you can check out our forums at www.geekson.com.
And you know what? Let's put
She's a heavy contributor along with a lot of our other fantastic
Let's give her an email address. I'll give her an email address this week. So okay. You can email her at smarty@geekson.com.
Yep. S-M-A-R-T-Y.
Yep. Yeah. And actually, we'll give John Wick one, too. So you can email him at...
Let's do John Wick.
Yeah. Okay. John Wick at geekson.com.
Spell Wick so people know.
W-I-C-K.
Yeah. All right. So
and
let's
speaking
listen.
Of John.
Yep. Let's listen to his. His is a nice, big, juicy one. It's yes. really good. All right. Cool. Roll it.
John's is nice, big, and juicy.
All right. Shh.
So I spent the last two episodes talking about games that really inspired me to make my own. I got a lot of emails asking me, do you have any advice for making my own game? Funny you should ask, but I do. In fact, I give seminars on it all the time. And I always use real games to give real examples of how to do it. And as chance would have it, I just designed a new little game for a buddy of mine that's a great way to illustrate exactly how I design role-playing games. Now, this isn't the only way to do it, but it's the way I do it. And for all those folks who ask me how it works, here's an example. So Nick's birthday was coming up, and I wanted to do something cool. Not just give him a cool present, but do something cool. For Christmas, Nick made all these great movie posters. He took famous films and photoshopped everybody's faces into the posters. They were great gifts, and I wanted to make sure Nick got something that would match what he got everybody else. So I decided to make him a role-playing game. Now, I knew exactly what kind of role-playing game to make Nick. That's because, like everybody else, Nick has that one thing that he loves more than anything else. And for Nick, it's zombies. So I knew exactly what kind of role-playing game he wanted. All I needed now was the right ingredients. First thing I ask myself when designing a game is, what is your game about? Well, this game would be about the same thing zombie survival horror was about. So to make it that kind of game, I'd have to make sure all the elements of that genre were mechanics. For example, I wanted the characters to be transient, temporary, interchangeable. In other words, in every zombie movie, you have specific kinds of survivors. So why not make that part of the game? In Nick's zombie game, I'd make 5 survivor types. The fast survivor, the clever survivor, the strong survivor, the deadly survivor. Each of them was good at one thing. The fast survivor could run. The clever survivor could think. The strong survivor could hold the door shut. And the deadly survivor could shoot the wings off mosquitoes. And those were the only stats. You could play the game with your character having just a name like Bill or Jackie or Dana or Tom. Your name and what you do. The anonymity and immediate intimacy of zombie survival horror. But I also needed the system to be deadly. At any second, you could get dragged through a window or stumble on a horde of undead killing machines. So the way the game works is this. If you're rolling for your survival type, a fast survivor running for zombies, for example, you get to roll 4 6-sided dice. If any of those dice roll a 6, you get to say what happens to your survivor. If you don't roll any 6s, then the zombie master gets to say what happens to your survivor. That doesn't mean your character dies, but chances are that's probably what happens. And it happens in an awful, terrible way. If you need to roll dice and you don't have any, that means the zombie master gets to say what happens. So if you are the clever survivor and need to run fast, the zombie master says what happens. Now this gives the characters an incentive to stay together. You've always got someone with you who knows how to do something. But that's not incentive enough. Let's add another rule. For every other survivor you have with you, you get to roll an additional die. That means if you've got four other survivors with you, you get to roll four additional dice, even if it's something you don't know how to do. In zombie movies, you always want to stick together. Now, there's a mechanic that encourages you to do just that. But when you roll dice is also important. I didn't want players rolling dice every time they wanted to shoot a zombie. That would slow down the game too much. So instead, what I wrote was this. I assume you're always shooting zombies. Climbing a fire escape, you're shooting zombies. Running through the grocery store for canned goods, you're shooting zombies. Trying to pick the lock on the police station door, you're shooting zombies. If there aren't any zombies, you shouldn't have to roll dice. After all, what difference does it matter if a door is locked and there are no zombies just 10 feet behind you ready to eat your brains? The locked door is only dramatic if there's something behind you that wants to kill you. Otherwise, it's just a guy standing at a door with a lockpick. Who cares? So if there aren't any zombies, don't bother rolling dice. If you're rolling dice, I assume you're shooting zombies. And if you don't roll a 6, your aim just wasn't good enough, and the zombie master gets to say what happens. Now, because zombie horror is all about what people do when it matters, we should include a fear mechanic. Every survivor starts off with 1 point of fear. That means every time you roll the dice, at least one of those dice should be black or red or some different color than the rest of the ones you're rolling. That's your fear die. If you need to use a 6 on your fear die to succeed in a risk, you can take no other action than to save yourself. In other words, you roll 4 dice. One of them is black, because that's your fear die. When you roll, only the black die rolls a 6. That means if you use the 6 on the fear die to gain narrative control and say what happens, you have to make your survivor escape in some way, by himself, leaving everyone else behind. Or you could let the zombie master say what happens. Either way, your sense of self-preservation takes over, and you have to take actions to protect yourself. That's how fear works. And there's more, a whole lot more. There's the zombie clock, always adding more zombies to the picture, and supplies and sanctuary. And then there's zombies with a capital Z. That's what happens when a survivor becomes infected and turns into a zombie. But I don't want to give you everything for free. Designing Nick's zombie game took me all of 10 minutes. All I did was think about what I wanted people doing in the game, and then I decided on the mechanics that would encourage and discourage those behaviors. Bonus dice for sticking together, fear dice, the anonymity of survivors, and the ease of making a new character. Oh, and I have to tell you about the helpless survivor. See, this is the old man or old lady or the guy in the wheelchair or even that dumb cat Jones from Alien. A character who cannot protect themselves. I needed that character, so I made the helpless survivor. The helpless survivor never gets to roll any dice. Not ever. But if you have this helpless survivor with you, you get to roll 2 bonus dice. So everybody wants the helpless survivor around. Like I said, it took me 10 minutes to come up with the game, but I needed a name for it. Nick's zombie game was cute, but not an end. That's when Nick's sister Ro came up with a name that kicked my ass. She said, "Call it the Shotgun Diaries." And right then and there, I knew she was right. Not only that, but the word diary created a mechanic in the game that tied everything together. The characters keeping diaries. But I really shouldn't say anything else. Designing a role-playing game isn't hard. Designing a good one, that's a little harder. But that's how I do it. I think of genre tropes that I want in the game, and I make mechanics out of them. By the way, Shotgun Diaries will be available at Gen Con, and after that, you'll be able to download the PDF from my website. For all you aspiring game masters out there, I hope this example helps. Keep on running, keep your ammo dry, and I'll see you at the safe house.
Right on.
Excellent.
John
that
Wick.
That was an enormous Wick piece.
Every time he does one, I want to go like pick up the thing that he's talking about and stuff. You know what I mean?
I love the care he puts into everything. I just love, you know, how... Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
He's got to come over and run a game for us.
Speaking of which...
He's not in town, though. He lives out of state.
Where is he?
He lives in, like, Nevada somewhere now.
Oh.
He was living in Santa Monica... But he moved.
John Wick.
Guys, we're always interested in hearing from other geeks out there who have a little something that they'd like to share with the world. So if you have an idea for something that you'd like to share on Geeks On.
And you think you could be a contributor.
Just give us an email at geeks@geeksOn.com and tell us about your idea.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
If you got your own sound equipment and like that and you can send us along a pre-made piece, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Email us first, and we'll chat to see what we can do. I guess we could do a whole...
We could do a whole contributor show. That would be awesome.
We would actually be able to get back to bi-weekly.
All righty, anything else before we go?
I think that's it.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, have a good geek week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Geek it out.